Hi, it's Sheila with the Communicate Influence podcast. The coronavirus has had a seismic effect on PR and marketing agencies globally, and will continue to do so for some time to come. Sadly, some agencies have been forced to close their doors. Others have been able to survive and even grow. Diversity and the ability to pivot appear to be the keys here. But what does the future hold for marketing and PR agencies around the world? I discussed this question with Linda Andros and Ken Evans, partners at Apex Public Relations and Ruckus Digital in Toronto, Canada. In this interview, Linda and Ken cover a wide range of issues, including serving clients at a distance, launching virtual services, supporting remote employees, and what the future may look like for PR and marketing practitioners.
This episode of the Communicate Influence podcast is brought to you by PodMotion.co. PodMotion is a new podcast creation and promotional agency launching very soon. Go to PodMotion.co for details. That's PodMotion.co for details.
This week, I'm talking to Ken Evans and Linda Andros. They are both partners with the Toronto PR and marketing agency, Apex Public Relations, and also the digital agency, Ruckus. Welcome to the Communicate Influence podcast.
Sheila, so nice to be here. Thank you for having us.
Yes, Sheila, it's great to be here.
Thank you. So we're going to talk about the impact of the pandemic on the PR industry, what the future looks like for agencies, and the changes that it's brought into practices that we've taken for granted for a long time. So starting just a few months ago, Ken, tell us what happened around that time, Friday, March 13th, and the following week, when everything seemed to happen really suddenly, and there were announcements from the province. We discovered, you know, lots of people weren't going into work the following week. How did things unfold at Apex?
Well, Sheila, it's kind of interesting because a lot of the conversation over the past almost 4 months has been one day blurs into the other, blurs into the other, one week blurs into the other. But that week, and probably about 10 days prior to the 13th, and then the decision on the 16th to take it fully remote, is still really vivid. And those dates are probably going to be etched into my mind and Linda's mind for a very, very long time. So obviously we had been tracking, like everybody, and certainly a lot of our peers within the industry, the sort of spread of the coronavirus globally. And certainly when it hit Europe and started to manifest itself, particularly in Italy, it seemed only a matter of time. And that was about 2 weeks prior to our sort of formal lockdown in Ontario and Canada. So we started communicating to staff. We started having more informal conversations in our weekly meetings. We have a staff meeting every Friday at 4 o'clock. And then we started having more formal agency-wide communications based on discussions with our leadership. A good 10 days before the Friday, the 13th, and started essentially communicating to our staff about possible scenarios. Were those scenarios going to be a full work from home? Everybody was going to extricate the building and the office with their computers and their laptops and their screens and so on and start working from home ASAP? Or was it potentially going to be, and even a week before, because remember, things happened so quickly, even a week before, I'd say on that Monday, there was still potentially the possibility that we'd go on rotation to keep physical distance. But it was evident on Friday, and it was clearly evident with the state of emergency that the health authorities put down. I think it was the morning of the 16th, but it could have been the evening of the 15th. That people came into the office, we immediately had a social distance, physical distance staff gathering, and everybody picked up their equipment. And we, effective from that moment, it was around 10 o'clock on that Monday, March 16th, that we made the final decision. Obviously, no one was surprised, and everybody moved from home. And then we started the new system that afternoon and more formally the next day on the 17th. But yeah, things were happening so quickly, lots of decisions, but we were able, fortunately, because of pre-thinking, pre-planning, and pre-communications, to be able to swiftly change into work from home mode.
And how, Linda or Ken, how did you communicate with your clients?
Well, feel free to jump in, Linda, but similar to our communications with our staff, we started communicating to our clients about potential scenarios. Again, it would have been about a week before. That communication, I think, happened again around the Monday or Tuesday, but I think we started a few initial communications to clients the week prior to as well, we were already having lots of conversation with clients about programming and, you know, how we would need to shift, pivot certain campaigns and programming, certain deliverables that were going to be external communications to, whether it was media, through social media, through Instagram, through influencers, what have you. So those conversations had already been a good 2-3 weeks in the mix. And then in terms of our own dynamic, I think that was happening again Monday, Tuesday, and then the final communication coming through on the Monday as well. We were really collaborating a lot with clients just on the whole dynamic on how we were proactively trying to get ahead of it, saying, don't worry, everything, meaning all programming, all client service, all liaison with your team members was going to be seamless.
Yeah, and I'll just add that, you know, one of the things that, you know, people don't think a lot about, but, you know, even, you know, when Ken was talking about us communicating with other partners and that sort of thing, you know, it was even, you know, dealing with our IT partner. And when we're talking about clients, you know, just understanding also for them that things aren't just going to suddenly go dark on our end, because we still had a lot of things that we had to do and figure out, things like, you know, you're still dealing with media and you have to send out packages and things are coming. So we have to deal with the building, figure out what's going on, who's going to be there to manage any couriers, that sort of stuff. So, you know, there's a lot of different parts and pieces that go with that. You can't just everybody up and leave the office, because work still is, you know, happening. And clients still need to feel confident that you're going to still be able to deliver on what that looks like.
So did everybody begin working from home? Or, as you said, you can't just up and leave the office. Were some people still traveling into the office to do things?
I would say that there was probably just one or two people who would go into the office just to manage anything that was happening with the building and anything that might be coming to our office for, say, the first week. And then pretty much everybody was gone for a good 8 weeks.
Right. And I mean, the way you've both described it, it sounds as though you planned well, things went very smoothly for you. Did it feel like that at the time, or did it feel kind of a little bit out of control, or did you feel uncertainty because it's the first time many of us have experienced something like this?
I can't speak for Linda, but I would say I personally did not feel that things were running smoothly. I mean, it was scary. It was scary in terms of the health risk and what that meant. We were obviously concerned about the health and safety of our staff, and then by extension, their families and our families, because there were so many unknowns at that point. There still are a lot of unknowns, but I mean, the unknowns at that point were epic. So I must say, I mean, we were in retrospect pretty quickly, about 2 weeks into it, it seemed, wow, that seemed to have worked really well. But at the time, it was, you know, just hour by hour, day to day, it was disconcerting, to say the least.
So a real exercise then in just looking at all the information that you had and of managing your emotions and making the best decision that you could at that point in time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Using all that great advice that you give to clients, I would imagine. So a massive change. Now, I've read about some agencies who've actually, you know, gone out of business, unfortunately, because clients, you know, shut down or couldn't do things. How's business been for you, if you don't mind me asking that question? I mean, did you lose any clients? Did you pivot and pick up more work with clients to focus on this pandemic? What was that like for you?
Sure. I mean, you know what? We were extremely fortunate. I mean, definitely at the beginning, there was some clients that put a pause, pulled back a little bit. And, you know, our jobs were really to help them work through that. You know, why were they pausing? You know, what was happening? How could we assist them as they moved through this different phase? But other clients, it was like great guns. Like, you know, there are certain brands that, you know, in a crisis, you know, people gravitate, people still eat food, they still, you know, use technology, that sort of thing. So there definitely were, we were fortunate that there were clients that really were ramping up. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, I think we've always done a good job at is looking down the road and always looking ahead. And we had been really working our new business funnel. And it just so happened that, you know, two or three of those new business clients actually started working in March. So, you know, as one client or a couple clients sort of paused, a couple of other clients started up. And, you know, one of the things about agency life is you've got to constantly be looking and showing your value to clients and what you can do for them or help them. Even the ones that paused, though, we didn't pause. We didn't say, oh, they're not doing any work anymore, so we're not going to work with, you know, we're going to stop work. That's just not who we are. So we continued to just keep doing stuff, showing them what was going on in the media, helping them stay ahead on issues and that sort of stuff. And I would say that probably now we're starting to see a return of most of those clients that went on pause. Would that be fair to say, Ken?
That's completely right. And I think one of the things that gave us some immunity to a certain extent in terms of the economic side of this is that we are a well-diversified business because we have consumer brand marketing, we have corporate, we have B2B, we have various other services within that in terms of issues, crisis communications, and so on. So that worked for us. That played to our advantage. And also, interestingly enough, there in the B2B tech space, there was a high relevance in certain categories like health and wellness, like education. So education tech, health tech, that actually were seeing great opportunity to be communicating and to be helpful. So we actually brought in, and this would have been, I guess, the first 2-3 weeks of April, three new B2B tech clients. That was just obviously just a wonderful thing to happen, and gave us a lot of motivation and focus.
You know, in a weird way, you know, we always say like being in an agency, we're shoemaker's children. We can't do, you know, we don't have time to do stuff for ourselves. And this did allow us to spend a little bit of time on ourselves. You know, Ken can talk more to this, but you know, there were some initiatives that we wanted to lean into a bit more or change. And try a different model. And so that allowed us to do that with very little risk. I mean, you know, we had the time. I don't know if Ken wants to talk about some of those initiatives, but it was good for us.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for the last 2 weeks of March, so March 16th to the latter part of March, obviously we have a very busy training practice. So media training and presentation training and so on. And we'd put all of those sessions on hold initially. And then obviously we had some time to look into new technologies, look into new ways of doing this. And we created a good example was the virtual media training module that had an emphasis on also helping brands start to navigate a new narrative for the pandemic reality. So a lot of clients who had already scheduled a conventional media training moved over to virtual, and then we got a whole bunch of new clients who took us up on the virtual media training as well. So all of those things, again, all of those additional sort of supplementary services that we bring to the table started getting very active in April and into May and ongoing. So that was a great relief. And then, of course, similar to you, Sheila, we also have an ongoing program called The Pivot, which is a podcast and a bit of a research element to it. And so given that the pivot was in 2 years old, that everybody was pivoting, it made sense to sort of lean a little bit more into that concept of the pivot and helping clients and helping other people within the industries in which we work to understand how they could navigate this from a marketing, communications, reputation management perspective.
So, I mean, obviously, you as you said, you were so diversified, an absolute strength for you there. Agencies with a slightly narrower focus or those that haven't quite completely diversified, they would be much more vulnerable than you would be. And then you had the strength of being able to carry through with some of your services and have them online, which must have been great.
It was a blessing. Certainly, Linda can talk more specifically just about the risks/risk mitigations of being more diversified versus not being more diversified, because I think you're right. I think those shops who were a little bit more focused on one or two key areas probably are struggling a little bit. But Linda, you probably can talk about that better than I can.
Well, I mean, I think it's, you know, we always say, like, don't put all your eggs in one basket. And, you know, there's definitely the agencies that are boutiques. That's great. Good for them. We just always knew as a business model that wasn't going to work for us. That also was the reason, you know, years ago why we started Ruckus. And that definitely has been, really helpful. I think overall you'll see a shift in a lot of agencies that are going to try to really diversify. I think that this has been a wake-up call for those that have gotten through it onto the other side to be like, hey, we can't just be in fashion and beauty.
Mm. Yeah, before we jump into that, which is it's something I'd like to ask you about your take on how this global crisis has affected other agencies. You also mentioned that you'd introduced a new funnel. So you were changing the way you were acquiring clients or attempting to win over clients just before this crisis struck. Was that scary? Did it make you nervous or was it in place and working just right about the right time?
I wouldn't say it was scary. I mean, we definitely have spent a lot of time, building sort of a new business process, if you will. Does it work perfectly all the time? No. But, you know, you set the plan, you work the plan. And that's definitely something that we started doing. Ken and I sat down a couple of years ago and said, okay, this is our plan and we're going to work the plan. And, you know, new business takes a long time. And if you don't put the energy in, then you're not going to see the results. And it did pay off. Like this, it's sort of like we sort of invested in that, and the dividends paid off just before this happened. And I think that was for us really a saving grace.
Mm. So you're both constantly working on improving your agency, refining processes. And I would imagine that for agency owners or serious staff who don't do that or, you know, assume that clients will be there for a long time, it would have been a shock to the system, this crisis. What kind of things have you picked up from other agencies or people that you might know in terms of how they've managed?
There is an agency that, you know, two agencies that we know quite well, and their primary focus was on events and doing consumer, direct-to-consumer activities. So obviously nobody's doing events or direct-to-consumer. And, you know, it's been interesting to watch those organizations start to pivot to figure out what that is going to look like virtually. And it's not something that we do a lot of. So that also for us was, you know, we had great partners that did that, but it wasn't something that we spent a lot of our energy on. But you're going to see that definitely change up for sure. And, you know, just knowing that the consumer, you know, has changed radically in some areas and that, you know, brands and marketers are going to have to approach people a lot differently. You know, that listening part is going to be super key. Agencies really understanding how they fit into the big overall marketing picture, I think is going to be really important.
I also think there's a great opportunity, though, for the industry as a whole. And I think this isn't just particular to or specific to Canada. I think this is globally. But it goes to what Linda was talking about. The consumer is in a very different headspace in terms of their behavior, in terms of their buying habits, in terms of their own sort of expectations of the brand in which they engage with. And they're looking for more. We talk so much about the notion of authenticity, but they're looking for more direction and help. They're looking for more sort of positions on advocacy, if you will. Certainly, as we've gone through the Black Lives Matter and the anti-Black racism dynamics of the past 3 weeks, they're expecting more of the brands in which they engage with, and I think. That's a nuanced and that's a strategic element where public relations and communications has a specific strength that they should be bringing to the table, and I think they are.
Mm. Yeah, that's a really good point, Ken. I just want to quickly go back to something that Linda mentioned when she was discussing the events agencies, and you use the phrase "change up." And different expectations. Could you elaborate on that a little bit more, Linda? I mean, how do you see these agencies, if you're advising them, how should they be changing and repositioning themselves in the market?
Well, I definitely would say, I mean, if you weren't heavily invested in some form of technology, if your direct-to-consumer activations were just sort of people-dependent, that's got to change. If you don't have a strong sort of technological backend or infrastructure, you're going to have to invest in one and find one. You know, again, you're also going to really have to understand, you know, where the consumer is, how to best engage with them. If you focus on moms are not going to be bringing their, like, you know, kids to baby shows or going to baby shows themselves. So how do you find new insights for mom and try and get to her in some sort of virtual event way? But I think really the technology, we're going to see a big technology shift there, a huge technology shift. And I also think too, you know, what people would be doing from a direct consumer or event activation, I think people now are going to be a little bit more, is it worth, you know, me going to this, or is it worth you giving me a free, whatever, piece of candy? You know, because I think people are going to be very cautious and want to know, is there value in whatever that direct consumer or event initiative looks like and what they're going to get out of it?
Mm. So you see people being very cautious for quite some time, even though we're all, you know, simultaneously complaining about, oh, you know, I can't stand being quarantined this length of time because it's just starting to change here in Toronto. You still believe people will be cautious in terms of where they're going and what they decide to attend?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I don't think it'll last forever, but I definitely think for the rest of this year, people are going to be cautious. And, you know, I think if tomorrow you put somebody on a street corner handing out something, I think you'd get a lot of people who would not take it.
Mm-hmm.
It you know, it depends on, you know, I think your phone may be more important now. You know, people may be like, okay, I'm going to walk by, you can scan me a coupon and I'll use it. But they may not want to be handed a coupon.
Mm.
Yeah, like there's going to be those subtle little things that I think people will just be like, oh, I don't know. And like, if I get 20 cents off something, do I really care?
Mm, mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And then Sheila, we have to think about the whole societal change that's going to happen. That's going to affect mom and dad and families. And it's going to be from education in terms of their kids, maybe going back to school in some sort of capacity in September, but similar to like businesses, it may be on a rotating basis. So they may be spending certain days of the week online doing online schooling and education. Universities, same thing. Also, you can, and that's just an example of one institution. So all of these things are going to have a direct impact on the whole cycle of people's lives, which is obviously going to impact a whole bunch of
people. Mm, exactly, yeah. Lots of things to think about there. Now, let's explore what Ken began to talk about, which is very important, the the public relations and comms role in terms of advocacy and brand position on important things that have happened, really incredible changes that, you know, brought about the demonstrations in the States, the death of George Floyd and Black Lives Matter. What kind of things have your clients been discussing with you? And, you know, how have you been responding in terms of advising or working on campaigns, all those kinds of things?
Well, I don't think there's an organization, a business, or an organization, or any of our clients, for that matter, who haven't had deep conversations about these matters, because we're dealing with a structural, systemic, real big problem and big challenge. And so there's no quick fix, but there does need to be a plan. There does, most importantly, there needs to be an active process. And that's going to be very contingent on the business and the brand itself. But I can't imagine any other clients, but certainly there is no client that we have who hasn't started that process, certainly over the past 3 weeks, and putting a lot of time, focus, and effort into it as they need to, as we all need to, including ourselves, including our own industry. I mean, it's the whole kit and caboodle. And then, of course, there have been specific, more tactical support areas in the issues and crisis communication to support certain clients in this area as well. But it is, when we think about brand reputation, that's what we do. We're really good at trying to anticipate things that are coming down. Sometimes it's difficult to be really, like pandemics and these kinds of things, or the horrible murder of George Floyd. But our job is to anticipate and come up with ways to, as we call it, inoculate the brand, so that they are ready when things happen. And when it's impossible to anticipate, it's important to then provide process and counsel on what that process looks like, should look like, what are best practices, and help them start.
Mm. Yeah, again, as you say, pivot and be as prepared as they can be.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think it also goes back to, I mean, this is not a new concept, and it's actually something that I think has been coming for a long time, but that brands are being authentic. You know, we've heard a lot of brands called out for not being authentic, not really listening, and, you know, it's that going back and looking inside and saying, what truly are our employees, our stakeholders saying, and are we really listening and prepared to do something? And now is the time. You know, if you're going to continue to be unauthentic, then I would hope that you don't exist longer, because I think, you know, the world needs more authenticity.
Yeah, definitely. Have you had any resistance from any of your clients where you've had to really coax them and say, you know, look, this is a defining moment for your business. You really need to get on board? Or have most of them been quite positive and progressive?
I think everybody is very on board and wanting to be as positive and productive and helpful and relevant as they can be. Absolutely. I think in terms of process, in terms of timing, in terms of level of how you expedite it, those are probably the more specific conversations. But no, not a single one of them is resistant by any means.
Oh, that's good news. Now, looking at the bigger picture, everyone, well, most people seem to be aware that this pandemic will not be a one-off in our lifetime. It's likely, given the impact that we've had on the environment, that this kind of thing, you know, could happen again. In the immediate future, there could very well be a second wave that could be significant. And as I just mentioned, you know, we could face another pandemic 2, 3, 5 years in the future. So with that in mind, what changes do you see to your industry in terms of processes, how you manage your employees, and how you work with clients in the future?
Wow, big question.
Well, I know it's interesting because, you know, people talk like this is sort of the first thing, but we actually had SARS like a couple of years ago, right?
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Right. It wasn't the same, but we did have sort of a little taste for what was coming. We just didn't know it. And obviously it was different. I think that, you know, it is, you know, if there something for whatever is coming after this, I think it's really focusing on helping people build resiliency and how we can all kind of get through it together. You really need each other. And certainly, you know, when we just look at like agency life, if I just go back to that, helping our people become resilient and know that like, what, you know, if something takes us a few steps back, we're together and we're going to move forward. I believe coming out of this, mental well-being for people is really like already, it's a challenge. So employers across the board are really going to have to invest in that and really make sure that they're helping their people in terms of their mental health, being resilient, supporting them in ways that, you know, their lives are, you know, I think of, I mean, it just so happens, you know, in our agency, we only have one person who's on mat leave right now. And we don't, just for some reason, have anybody with little children. So we don't have to at the moment manage that dynamic, but there are lots of places out there that have to manage, you know, everybody, mom is at home working and taking care of the kids and doing dinner. Not to say that dad isn't, but that could be an ongoing thing. And you have to understand how you can support your staff and still, you know, support them professionally and personally. And I think that that's going to become much more important moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, for a lot of employees, it would have been a shock. All of a sudden, you were working at home. For some people, as you just mentioned, Linda, it would have been incredibly difficult, you know, if you were in, say, a dining room across from your partner, and you might have, as we do in Toronto, given the cost of housing, you know, a young adult, your adult child working upstairs because, you know, they've just got a job, but they can't afford to move. So how did you, your agency, specifically support your employees during what must have been really hard for some people, not being able to go out or see their friends? What did you do on a more personal level?
Well, you know, yes, I think it's definitely very hard, especially for the younger people. And to your point, you have to remember, we've talked about this internally at our office a few times. Like, yeah, some people, you know, they're working from their beds because, you know, they live at home and they don't have an office. But, you know, we really tried to, you know, Ken mentioned that, you know, we tried to keep up with certain things that were the same as what we were always doing. So we start our week together, we end our week together. You know, Friday is a little bit more fun on the Zoom. We have a theme. But we also just tried to have little clusters of groups that could interact with each other that were not about work. They were just about, how are you doing? What's going on? How can I help? And just, you know, looking and reminding people that you're there to talk about things that are unrelated, like you had a fight with your parents or whatever. And so I think that that's really important to people, for them to realize that you just don't see them as somebody who's doing the work. You see them as people.
Mm.
I will say that I think, you know, you really, you know, people, you have to be a really good listener because you have to be really attuned to what maybe you're not hearing or what you're sensing from somebody. Like you really have to be like, oh, so-and-so doesn't seem like themselves. I'm just going to check in and make sure they're okay. Whereas before you could read the body language or whatever, you don't have that anymore. And you have to just be very attuned to what people might or might not be putting out and then figure out how you can help them.
Mm. Yeah, and that is proactive because, I mean, some organizations say, you know, if you're struggling, if something doesn't feel right, get in touch. But I think, you know, not everybody will do that. People introvert. They may feel embarrassed or, you know, even shameful if their mood is down or they're even feeling depressed. So I think checking in is really important.
Yeah, and sharing stories, right? So that people know they're not alone. Like if I've had a bad day and I'm talking to someone, I'm like, oh my gosh. Then they're like, oh, I can relate to you, or I feel comfortable sharing with you. And I think that that's super important because, yeah, people are not going to come. They would be worried that it would be career limiting or that now you think less of them, which is not the case. But I know especially if I was a junior person, I wouldn't say anything probably.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't want someone to know that I was feeling like I had no clue what I was doing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's difficult for them. In terms of your agency communication, cross agency communication on client progress, client meetings, things like that, the more serious stuff, how did that go, especially at the beginning?
Certainly on the clients that I work on the corporate B2B side of the business, we were able to, I mean, we have it was in the first 6 weeks, a daily routine at the beginning of each day and at the end of each day. It's now just because that's too much to your point, you know, too much Zoom, too much. And we need people to have some head down time to get some writing done, to get some deliverables done, and to have that space to be able to do some proper thinking and creative thinking. Because, like I said, our creative juices are coming from different places now, or at least different sort of levels, if you will. So it was a lot of communication early, and then it was, you know, trying to come up with new ways of doing brainstorming and whiteboarding. You know, what I would call those mini micro brainstorms that you would do around a whiteboard, which can be so exhilarating. You don't have access to that, so you have to find new ways of doing it. But you know, it's a little bit trite, Sheila, but it's just you got to communicate, and show from those people who are leading accounts, be really, really mega clear about expectations in ways that they, you know, way more clear than they would have been had we all been in the office together.
Yeah, it's almost like you might think that you're overdoing it, but you're not really. Yeah. Yeah, I understand that. Now, another big picture question, like looking to the future, what kind of big changes do you see the industry adopting going forward, not just here in Toronto, Canada, but globally? What things are going to change as a result of this global crisis?
Well, I think there's a couple. I think one, now that we've all worked remotely for whatever, 3 months, 3 years, I don't know how long it is, right? Location. I think that this really, in a weird way, levels some playing fields, because I think that it just goes to show that your agency can be anywhere.
That's a really good point.
It does not have to be in the same town or whatever, right? If we're all virtual, what's it going to matter? And that leads me to talent. I think that the type of talent that people are going to look for will be that talent that is very comfortable with technology. Maybe has a high, I don't want to say that they're necessarily extroverted, but they are comfortable adopting mannerisms that may work better on remote type working. Maybe more comfortable being a bit more fluid, like, you know, working whatever from 5 to midnight because their client is somewhere else. So sort of mindset. As Ken mentioned, definitely technology will change a lot of things. It has. Going back to talent, also diversity in people. I mean, we touched on a little bit of it, but as we're hearing, the diversity of people overall that are coming into PR from race, gender, experience, I think that that's going to be huge. And then, you know, I'll also say that PR, I'm going to go on a limb here, PR has been nipping at advertising's heels for a long time. And I think that it's going to become even more important and probably take an even bigger chunk out of the ad agencies. I just saw an article today where, you know, this agency is like, they're pivoting to be agile and all this stuff. And I was like, where were you like 2 years ago? Really? You're going to be agile now? Like you're, you know, the message, and I think that the situation has really driven that, the message and the ability to craft it and think through proper ways to communicate to different audiences is with PR, will continue to be with PR, and will start to just get into other forms of communication. And I think ad agencies will change and be less than they are now. But I'm going out on a limb there.
I think that's probably true, you know, in particular, given the comments that Ken made earlier about some of the issues that have arisen during this period, you know, the murder of George Floyd and things like that, that have made us look at, you know, who we are, what we're doing, how we behave, how we think, and your clients and others need so much guidance in that area. I think that kind of issue is going to play a greater role.
Yeah, and I think, you know, definitely there are some amazing ad campaigns that have really driven action. But as I think we'd all agree, there's a lot of, and this is not a like PR advertising is better. I just think that PR is able to really leverage multiple insights to drive an action or to leverage, you know, some element of emotion. Because not everybody can be Nike, as you know, as an advertiser. So you're using PR to help tap into what makes us human.
In light of the remote working, do you think that you'll have more employees working from home? Do you see that as a growing trend?
I think, and I've heard a lot of people say, yeah, we're definitely going to go remote. You know, we're not going to have an office anymore. And I actually feel like that, I understand that sentiment right now. But I don't believe that's going to happen in the long term. So for us, we have told staff that we are not coming back to the office until fall. And then when we do come back, it'll be a very like small little test group, and we'll make sure that, you know, everyone's comfortable and that everything is rolling properly. We're not just going to suddenly have people come back and then have to send them home again. But I do see us ultimately being back at the office in some iteration, because I think people really do like being in the office. They do find it a lot more collaborative. They like getting that energy from their colleagues. And that's kind of what they went into the industry for, to like learn from these people. So I don't think we would ever go 100% remotely. Just on the purely business side, which is very boring, you know, a lot of people have office space, and no matter what, you can move remotely, but you still got to pay for that office space until you can get rid of it. So what, you're going to be spending whatever, hundreds of thousands of dollars for it to be empty because everyone's working at home? You know, my more skeptical side of me does not believe that.
Mm-hmm. And Ken, what are your thoughts?
I totally 100% agree. I personally can't wait for the rise of the office again, on a personal note. I don't think it's going to happen in the way that we want, not as business owners, but as practitioners, until we get a vaccine. But I do believe that's where we do our best work. That's where we grow faster and better. To Linda's point, that learning, that mentoring, that collaboration, that gut checking, all of that just makes us better. So I look forward to that day. I think it's still a little while off, but I do believe it's coming back.
Yeah.
We're like
hopefully
dogs.
Soon.
We're like dogs. We're very social creatures. So we like to be together. And then we're also at Apex very, we're lucky. Our office space is very large. So we can easily accommodate a good social distancing with people, just because we're not all crammed into a small little space.
Listen, it's been a fascinating conversation. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. Is there anything that either one of you would like to add before we wrap up here?
Well, except I think to your point, Sheila, it's been obviously lots of ups, but there have been lots of downs, rather, lots of downs and tricky and difficult times, but there have been some ups, and there's been a ton of learning, I think, as an agency. But I think if you were to, you know, poll our practitioners at Apex and Ruckus, I think a lot of them would admit that they have stretched themselves professionally in ways they've never expected. And so that gives me some lots of optimism moving forward.
Yeah, definitely. I think that, you know, people-wise, you know, in the industry in general, you've seen some really great things happen with people. And you've just, you know, people's just kindness and brands' kindness, you know, we've definitely seen that. And, you know, hopefully that really sort of engages people to be like, you know, all these other things that have happened that we need to take on, that we can do it. We're all banded together to really try and, I wouldn't say solve, but be a part of the solution for some of these bigger issues.
Yeah, a number of people have observed that, or organizations, haven't they, that they've, you know, there's been more kindness, more collaboration, more effort to resolve things. So that can only be a good thing. I do appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
No, thanks, Sheila. That was really interesting.
Thank you so much, Sheila. I appreciate it.
You bet. You take care of yourselves.
Okay. Bye, Sheila.
Bye-bye.